From a results standpoint, not a great weekend for Gamecock Athletics as we roll into your Monday morning. Hope your week's off to a good start. I guess in the big picture, though, USC women's basketball still gets the number two seed in the SEC, rolling into the SEC tournament. The Gamecock men, the dramatic conclusion of the regulation anyway, out in Mississippi State, sending the game to overtime, eventually coming up short there. And Gamecock baseball looks dominant in the first couple of games against Charleston Southern and then drops game number three to avoid the sweep or not quite come up with the sweep. So that's how I see things coming in this morning, sir. What about you?
Oh, weather-wise, it was a fun, nice, enjoyable weekend, and you had a lot of entertaining sports to go along with it. Watched a lot of the Honda Classic this weekend, and then you mentioned Gamecock Athletics, took the kids to the baseball game on Saturday afternoon and had an interesting conversation in which spelling seemed to shout me out and allow someone to figure out who I might or might not be and that effect that I might or might not be on this radio show. That was entertaining. But a good time there at Founders Park on Saturday afternoon and great weather for baseball. And then the basketball game's kind of weird. And I actually don't know what to make of Dawn Staley's team now as they head into the postseason. The status of Asia Wilson in question as she deals with vertigo and the way they lost yesterday, I don't know if it's cause for concern about the future of the program. Not that they're going to fall off the map, not that they're going to all of a sudden revert back to being relevant, but it does seem like the rest of the SEC has caught up to South Carolina and maybe to some extent passed them, and we'll see what exactly happens in the future here and what the status of Asia Wilson will be heading into the weekend. And then the guys' team, great opportunity and not able to close the deal. And that one, not that it's going to probably cost them the NCAA tournament because I think it was a long shot for them to get in anyway, but certainly a great opportunity that they lose on Saturday afternoon, being up 14 in the first half and not able to hold on and end up losing in overtime.
Carolina looked like almost as good as they have looked in the first half, like you mentioned. Then they can't hold on to that lead. Mississippi State, you figured a run was going to come at some point, especially playing at home there, and it certainly came. And then the Gamecocks get the huge momentum of Hassani Gravitt hitting the buzzer beater. It's a classic play, man. And I don't think as fans we realize how difficult it can be. It seems very simple, right? You're up three in the final seconds, you foul a guy.
Right.
But these are really fast guys, and that's something that is never practiced, I think, which is what makes it look as difficult as it did, because Mississippi State, they tried to foul Hassani Gravitt. He just didn't let it happen. And once that didn't happen, they had no backup plan. He had about as wide open a three from the top of the key as you can get and stuck it to send it in overtime. Unfortunately for the Gamecocks, though, they fall up 4 points short, 72-68, the final score there. And now it gets really tricky with a couple of regular season games left. You got LSU at home, the season finale, and then you go on the road to Auburn this Saturday to finish the regular season. You lose both of those games, you finish under 500. You win both of them, you finish 17-14, and you finish 8-10 in the league. You split them, and you do finish above 500 on the season, and I'm guessing that's probably where the odds would be with LSU coming in. And now Will Wade is under fire a little bit as well as part of this whole college basketball thing. Friday morning was really the first time the news was coming out, the new Yahoo report that had names and numbers. And, of course, P.J. Dozier mentioned in that thing among a ton of other college basketball players. So we'll continue to get into that. And the reaction that we saw over the weekend from college basketball in general, I think, was basically what you thought, Bill, that individual schools would have to make decisions. By and large, they made the decision like, we don't see anything wrong. We're moving forward. You guys figure it out if you think something's wrong, but we're going to play this thing out. I think you mentioned maybe Texas, and when we were talking before the show, that Texas was one of the few, if not the only, school to hold a guy out because of eligibility concerns.
Right, yeah, Eric Davis, they elected to hold him out over the weekend. And, of course, then the other bombshell news that drops, I guess, Saturday morning or late Friday, I'm not sure when exactly you would deem it dropped, but Sean Miller of Arizona, the latest to be implicated. And this just in wiretaps, federal wiretaps. And have you heard the wiretaps? Have you read where basically the agent, the AAU agent, is trying to give Sean Miller almost an out, saying, you know, shouldn't we be dealing with an assistant coach in this situation? I'm kind of paraphrasing, but Sean Miller basically saying, and again, I'm paraphrasing, nope, I'm the guy you deal with. You go directly with me. and here's what we need to do, and let me know how we can get this money to you. I mean, it's basically, the way I've read it, I have not heard, obviously. I don't know if there's the actual audio out there, but the way it reads is that basically the agent is basically going, wait, I'm dealing with a head coach on this? You're going to be the man in charge, not an assistant like everybody else? And be able to yell plausible deniability if you get called? And Sean Miller going, yep, I'm the guy. You come straight to me, and I'm the one that's going to handle it.
I thought we would get more reaction like what we see out of Georgia coach Mark Fox. We'll give you the details on his reaction, but the strongest language is just, I'm disgusted with how people have treated our game. It's absolutely disgusting is the way that Mark Fox is coming off.
And I'm not saying that Mark Fox cheated. I have no idea. What I am saying is Mark Fox knew. This shouldn't be like, you're in the industry. It's the same in any other business, I'm sure. If you're a sales guy and you're selling, you know, printers or copiers, or you're selling insurance or whatever, you know what the rest of your field is doing to acquire their business. Maybe you don't have the proof. Maybe it's just you go to the local conventions or the meet and greets and you hear the stories because you're in the field. When coaches come out and say that, you've heard the stories. You're in the industry. You know what's going on. That to me, I thought was just an interesting, weird line, because Mark Fox, again, there's nothing that implicates him that lets me know that he or his program has acted in any sort of inappropriate way. But to almost act like, my goodness, did you know this was going on? Come on, man, you knew it was going on. You might not have known it for 100% positive that said school was doing something wrong, but you hear about what's going on in your industry.
The Gamecocks will have to inbound. From underneath, it'll be Silva, brings it in to Gravett. Defender falls down. Hassani lets it go from the arc.
Yes.
It's good! And we're going to overtime. The defender for Mississippi State fell down. Gravett was able to take it all the way down court and get a three at the top of the key, and he just did beat the horn. And they'll go check the monitor, but if this holds, we are going to OT for the first time this season.
An interesting play there to end the game, to end the regulation on Saturday. I'll admit, we had gone to, I had the 8 and the 5-year-old with me, and we had gone to the baseball game and checked out part of that. It was warm out there. Saturday was a beautiful day and warm, so we left in about the 6th inning and headed on over to the Vista, and there was a group of people watching the game, and that was an entertaining, you know, obviously when Gravett hit the shot, excitement, elatement, everybody was pretty fired up and ready to go there. Thank God she didn't look back at you when you...
Elatement's a good one.
The elation that followed obviously would be short-lived as South Carolina had fallen overtime, but the foul attempt, did you think it was a foul? Like, I thought I probably would have blown the whistle. The Mississippi State player,
you could not blow that.
Really?
You could not make that call. It was so weak. So,
and you know what, you know, and it goes back, you make a good point about not practicing fouling in that situation. A lot of teams have not practiced how to foul and not get the flagrant foul or to
right,
end
well,
up.
That's what it looked like at first. So Hassani Gravett gets it down 3, what was it, 4 or 5 seconds, something like that, right? And the original defender, so when you're talking about on the opposite free throw, it looks like he thought he was maybe even going to go intentional foul, so he tried to pull up, and that's what you heard on Derek Scott on the Gamecock IMG Sports Network, by the way, say that the defender falls down. That's what it looked like to me. It looked like he was afraid he was going to have an intentional foul, because that's the worst nightmare, right?
Right.
2 free throws and the ball, and now you've gone from making sure you don't lose to giving the team a pretty good chance to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first problem of them. And then it looked like it was Quindary Weatherspoon coming off to help, and Gravett was already by him, and he just kind of reaches out and slaps at him really weak and totally didn't have – like, I've read the – I think the official definition of a foul is when the defender unfairly gains an advantage.
Right.
Like, there was no advantage gained by just smacking him around. Like, Gravett was unfazed, and he was gone. I'm glad they didn't call that foul. How did you see this?
Well, I think it's one of those, as we were kind of talking about it after it happened again, I was down in the Vista with the kids, and we were getting something to eat and kind of watching the game, and it's one of those things, I guess kudos to the referee, because you, as a referee, I think are anticipating
right.
the foul to come, and so any slightest touching or a thing that could be construed as a foul is generally called, I think, in that situation. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, man, South Carolina got away with one. I thought he did just enough to have the foul called, and Gravett was able to kind of, as you said, wiggle free, go to his left, and kind of get around the defender and then get a very clean look at it. You're right. It was like Mississippi State didn't have a plan. It's like, all right, we'll foul him and we'll send him to, oh, wait, he's loose and now he's wide open and nobody knows how to defend him, and he knocks it down, and all right, we got to go to overtime. Great play by Gravett. Great, you know, good execution and the ability to make the shot. Unfortunately, it's kind of a side note in a game that South Carolina had in control.
But the problem was also with Gravett and Chris Silva, the best players in the game for the Gamecocks, by and large, from a scoring standpoint, also combined for 15 turnovers
right
between both of them. Gravett had 8 of them. You can't have your point guard turn the ball over 8 times.
Well, it goes back to the poll question.
A postman turned it over 7 times as well, right, with them, and Caroline with 21 turnovers as a team. But 15 combined with those two, you're talking about point guard play, where we asked what Carolina needed to do after that Georgia win to continue a strong finish, and they make a bunch of threes, finish second to good point guard play. So you can argue they certainly got it with 19 points. Gravett had a couple of threes right before half to help extend the lead to 7 points for the Gamecocks, and then he scored most of his points. I guess he scored 13 in the second half and overtime after that, finishing with a tied for a game-high 19. But the 8 turnovers, man, on the other side of things. And Chris Silva with 11 points and 12 rebounds, but also you don't want to nearly mess around with a triple-double with the turnover stat there. 7 turnovers from the post is difficult to overcome.
And in 24 minutes, I mean, just not the kind of production. 4 fouls, he was in foul trouble for most of it and wasn't able to play. 24 minutes from him. And
so the difference is, you're talking about point guard play. Carolina, when they've gotten good point guard play this year, usually it's Hassani Gravett and Wes Myers combining to play
right.
Well, this game, Myers just played 14 minutes. Gravett played basically the entire game, played more than 40, so most of regulation and overtime. But Myers only plays 14 minutes. He scores 4 points and is pretty much non-existent besides that 1 assist and 1 turnover. It's just they weren't able to handle Mississippi State on defense. We saw it wasn't as bad, the defense on the ball defense for Carolina against Mississippi State, as it was in Columbia earlier this year, where it looked like Mississippi State could go by the Gamecocks anytime they wanted. But it wasn't really good either. They still had their way getting by the initial pressure of the ball, I thought, pretty often. It turns out, I think it's a very similar, Bill, into what we've seen from Carolina and Tennessee on the women's side of things this year. I know they played both games without Asia Wilson, so that has a lot to do with it. But it looks like it's just not a good matchup for the Gamecocks. Some teams you just don't match up well with. Mississippi State, because of their guards and their ability to penetrate and do it consistently against the Carolina guards, it hasn't been a good matchup this year for the game.
Yeah, Lamar Peters kind of having his breakout performance, had just 2 points. I had to go back and look and see what he did against South Carolina in the previous game, but had,
I think he's only averaging 3.
Yeah, he's averaging 9, comes in averaging 9 points per game.
Gotcha.
But had 19 on Saturday, and certainly that was a massive difference. And Wesley Myers, you mentioned the poll question, you mentioned the results, but yeah, it's point guard play. And South Carolina, I would call Saturday's point guard play definitely inconsistent. When you score 19 points, you hit some of the shots he did, okay, you're good. But 9 turnovers combined by your point guards in Wesley Myers and Hassani Gravett, just 3 assists for the game. That's not the kind of stat you have to have. And then you throw Chris Silva in there, that he's in foul trouble for the majority of the game. Not a moral victory, let's be perfectly honest there, but it was kind of amazing that South Carolina had the lead they did and then also was able to get that game to overtime, and simply a game that you're going to look back on, and that's the difference in this season. That's the difference in maybe going to the NIT or going to no postseason play at all, maybe going to the NCAA tournament or whatever, not being able to pull off that game. They've had opportunities down the stretch of games. Now you think about during the good stretch of games, they're up on Texas Tech late in the game, not able to hold on to the lead. They're tied with Tennessee with, I think, 3 minutes to go in Columbia, not able to hold on to the game. So certainly there's been opportunities this year to improve the record.
And just to be clear, the USC women's basketball team losing 65-46 yesterday. Asia Wilson not making the trip with the Gamecocks. This was unexpected. She had a case of vertigo, and Dawn Staley saying that she's not quite sure when Wilson will be back with the team. The Gamecocks not scheduled to play until Friday. They get the double bye in the SEC tournament and the number two seed. Even though they did lose, they finished up 12-4 in conference play and get that number two seed. And Gamecock baseball coming up short yesterday as well. 4-2, the final score. The Gamecocks absolutely dominant in games number one and games number two against Charleston Southern, though, and just miss out on the sweep. So that's how Gamecock athletics fared over the weekend. Here's Georgia coach Mark Fox after his team's win against LSU over the weekend, coming off the loss against the Gamecocks, was speaking out strongly about the FBI investigation into NCAA issues.
I'm disgusted with how people have treated our game. You know, there's always going to be unethical behavior. Let's say we give each team $1 million to pay your players. You know, someone's not going to like the salary cap, and they're going to find a way around it. But whatever the rules are, and I'm all in favor of trying to find ways to help these kids more and more, I'm 100% behind that. But whatever regulations we have in place, we're supposed to follow them.
Again, Georgia coach Mark Fox, 93-82, Georgia beats LSU over the weekend. A bit of a surprising weekend in the SEC. Florida beats Auburn, so Auburn continues to struggle down the stretch here. 72-66, that final score. Auburn drops 12-4 in league play. Tennessee right behind them, so now they're just a game back. They win at Ole Miss by 8, 73-65, the final score. Texas A&M a winner at Vanderbilt by 8. Arkansas wins at Alabama by 3. Kentucky beats Missouri easily, 87-66. That goes along, of course, with the Gamecocks' overtime loss at Mississippi State by 4.
Number one, Auburn, it'll be interesting. They're down. They're hurt. They're banged up right now, and we're coming to the conclusion of the season, to how they finish up this week and what type of team. I'll be interested to see if South Carolina can keep the momentum going from a couple good performances, because if they do that, if they can bounce back from the loss on Saturday, I think they have a good chance to beat Auburn on Saturday over in the Plains. This Auburn team's down to about 7 or 8 scholarship players.
And they're playing at Arkansas tomorrow night late.
Yeah, they're a little worn down, but Auburn certainly is the team that we'd kind of started to look at. And this is why I didn't necessarily want to buy into Auburn too much as we move through the season. But now they've suffered some injuries. The rest of the SEC, again, Florida, maybe they're setting up to make a run. I don't know. The SEC's really good. I just don't think that there's that top-end team still in the conference.
Sure, Kentucky, the most impressive over the weekend, 21-point win against Missouri. Missouri's been solid this year. Will be very interesting to see who steps up here down the stretch now in the SEC and how this thing ends up playing out. The Gamecocks with 2 regular season games left. Home Wednesday, 6:30, LSU, and then at Auburn on Saturday. Let's get out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines and hear what you have to say about men's college basketball, the latest in the NCAA and FBI investigations. 803-404-6100 is the number. Mike is up first this morning. Hello, Mike.
Come on, guys.
Not much, man. What do you got? Mike, can you hear us? We got you.
Sorry about that. Hey, this whole thing's a joke. I mean, the whole thing's a joke. Did you hear what Mark Emmert said this weekend?
I did hear what he said. I'll pull it up for you. What's your take on it?
What his take is on is we're not going to punish anyone except for the people we cherry pick. The only thing that I have hope for, and I agree with Coach Fox, which he better hope there's nothing in his program, kind of like the Russian athlete who got caught doping when she said she didn't believe in doping. The only hope that I think is with Tim is this is the FBI. We haven't heard from them. These guys don't go to the wall and lose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's much from a legal standpoint, the FBI case against you or the federal case against you is seen to be very, very much, very strong compared to local case against you, something like that.
Once they start, they're not going to stop. I think that's the other thing, that is how much more is going to come out. I mean, it took the all sanctimonious Duke program all of 6 hours to say, yeah, we've investigated this.
So when Mark Emmert comes out and says, we're really serious about making really systemic change, starting with spring and going forward, you're translating we're not going to look into this very closely.
No, I think they're going to change some rules and all, but it's hard to see anybody getting in trouble. Just number one, it's rampant. But, Tim, every 6 months I tell my doctor I'm going to start eating more salad. You know what I mean? I'm real serious about it this time. I want to lose some weight and not be 40 and out of shape and all that. I go through this every 6 months. They wrote a check and said you can cheat when they let North Carolina cheat. They punished Penn State for something that had nothing to do with competition. This whole thing, the NCAA is a complete fraud. It's a joke. You get commitments that put on pictures of Twitter of them flashing cash and new cars and stuff. The whole thing's a joke. Everybody knows this. Well, you just said that it's widely known there are schools that cheat more so than others, correct?
Right.
Well, there you go. Is that not the answer?
I think to go back to Mark Emmert's statement, talk about cleaning up, I don't know how you clean it up. And I do agree with what Mark Fox said. If you were to say, okay, we're going to give everybody $1 million and you disperse and you figure out how to use your money properly, and that's really what they do. Here's 15 or 13 scholarships in college basketball. Here's, I don't know what a scholarship's worth nowadays. You figure out how to use it, people are going to go, okay, we now still have to make the playing field more level for us to get said recruit to make more money. I hate to say it, I don't know of the way around it to stop it. And in college basketball, and in more so than any other sport, I know people want to talk about college football and some of the things that go into that, but the way the grassroots foundation is run with AAU and the involvement of shoe companies and the easy access to players and to players' families, you go down, and I would go down during the summer, and they would do the big AAU national event down at Disney World, down at the Wide World of Sports Complex, and you'd walk in there, and it's the easiest thing to be able to have access to a player, to a player's families. I mean, there's it's easy access. You actually don't have that in football. You have to kind of go seek out, say, the big-time quarterback, the number one quarterback in the nation, and kind of go to his high school or figure out where he lives.
But it's becoming more like that with 7-on-7 tournaments.
But even those have not reached the level of – like, those 7-on-7s are still – it's the big – the opening out in Eugene, Oregon. And that's still the way that's kind of run. It's still not as easy access to it because, really, it's a very limited number – in the grand scheme of things, a very limited number of kids as opposed to you go to an AAU tournament – and it's a mass of kids. And so you might be a big booster. You might be just a guy who's trying to help out. And it's a lot easier to run into a kid that you want to go to your school. And that's the other part of this that's kind of fascinating that we haven't gotten to is the booster aspect of it. We're still focused on the shoe side of it and the agent side of it. And it's just basketball. And I'll go back to saying this again, too. One of the reasons I think you see this in basketball – in football, in these 7-on-7 events, it's a lot harder to identify the future elite prospect than it is in basketball. And on top of that, you got to wait 3 years. They got to go to campus, and then they got to stay healthy, and then they got to actually turn into that big time prospect. I mean, think about it. If you were that guy, if you were that agent, and you're tracking Jacob Eason in high school, right now you don't know if you're you don't know how that's going to turn out. But if you were tracking DeAndre Ayton or an elite prospect, all you got to do is get him through 1 year of school. And it's a lot more – the way college basketball recruiting is set up, your hit rate on those elite prospects is a lot higher than it is in football.
Andrew hit us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning at Tim Hill 107.5 says, this scandal starts and ends with NCAA hypocrisy. To me, the fact that the NCAA is in charge of – is basically judge and jury in this thing – and also DA and everything else. Like, they have to investigate it, and then they have to get the penalties. This thing's a little bit different because the FBI is doing most of the work in this case that's being publicized and the Yahoo story came out. But how much they're going to look into it past it and how difficult they're going to rule, I think that's what has Mike grizzled this morning from the statement from Mark Emmert saying he didn't glean anything from that, and he thinks that they're basically will look the other way moving forward. You got to remember, $1 billion is what the NCAA, the March Madness, the tournament brings in revenue-wise. And that's where Andrew's coming from the hypocrisy standpoint. I don't know what the answer is. I don't even know what I want to happen out of this. That's what I was going to ask Mike. How do you want to see this thing handled moving forward? It's going to be really interesting to see how all of this goes. But right now, it's just an absolute mess, and it's almost kind of a free-for-all, and it's individualized reactions is what I'm seeing here, because you see Tom Izzo say, I had nothing to do with this, we're moving forward. And you hear Mark Fox saying, this is disgusting, it's got to change.
I mean, think about this with college basketball. You have more kids jumping high schools and going to play for the Finley Preps. And you only have one or two in college, IMG. I mean, they can go
around. You're talking about?
Yeah, in football, you have one or two of those. But I think the college basketball scene is a lot different than the college football scene. I know people want to kind of compare the two and say, boy, wait, just wait till they get their hands on football. No, it's a little bit different because the agents aren't as involved. The agents are involved later in the college process in football, and then that's where it gets a little shady. But you don't have the shoe deals like you do. I mean, was it Clowney signed with Puma? Do I remember that correctly? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that, you know, would have been different if Nike would have been involved with Jadeveon Clowney or Adidas right off the bat as a junior in high school, when we all knew, and Clowney was, what, the biggest recruit that I think you can make the case, the biggest recruit in college football in the last 20 years. I mean, and he didn't, having covered that recruitment and knowing a lot of players in that situation, it was nothing like what Zion Williamson just went through. And Williamson wasn't even the top recruit in the country. I think most people just naturally assume because of the airtime and everything that happened. He was only, I think, number two or number three, depending on where you looked at. And think about all the airtime that Zion Williamson's gotten, be it SportsCenter with a dunk or doing an interview. Like Clowney, everybody knew he was good. And most of the information you got from him was because he was an in-state prospect, and it was either South Carolina, maybe Alabama, Clemson was involved. But he didn't get near the national exposure that Zion Williamson's gotten for the last 3 years. And then you go to these AAU tournaments during the summer. Zion Williamson's, that crowd that they had for Zion Williamson versus LeVar Ball's team was ridiculous. You had people like LeBron James showing up to watch that. I mean, the attention that the AAU events get and the way that shoe companies are able to kind of host those and have private meetings, and all of a sudden agents get involved with shoe companies, because when you get your prospect, who are you having to turn around and negotiate with to get a shoe deal? It's an entirely different world in college basketball than it is in college football.
And as you're saying this, I'm thinking, how do you combine capitalism with this? That's what's happened, right?
Yeah.
And I think we're only seeing the natural result of it. The FBI's findings is what kind of sheds a light on this thing. Brent hits us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning. He says the other wild card in the scandal is that the FBI doesn't have to release all of their findings. Probably a bunch of big-time universities hoping they keep some of the investigation under wraps. Wanted to let you hear from Mark Kingston yesterday. Carolina coming up short 4-2 against Charleston Southern, ending a 6-game win streak.
I didn't expect us to only have 4 hits today. There's no question about it. So how many you expect to score, it's based on the opponent. But when you're averaging 9 runs a game and you're going on a Sunday, you know, and your pitchers do a good job of managing the game for the most part, you should expect to win.
I think pretty logical comments coming out from Mark Kingston. You could tell he was not happy at all not getting the sweep for the Gamecocks. I think he knows the importance, how that can really change your season, man. Win 2 out of 3. You always want to win at least 2 out of 3 in a series, but you start getting sweeps and your record starts to get real good real quick. You drop a couple of those games like the Gamecocks have done now in their first 2 series, losing 1 each to VMI and Charleston Southern, then that record, it's more difficult to get towards the 40-win plateau when you start adding things up, especially taking on a team like Clemson this upcoming weekend and then moving into the SEC portion of the season.
I'm with you. I mean, I think Kingston, the way he kind of approaches it and handles his...
You know, you want to say business.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm just kind of... The way he kind of came across there is a guy that doesn't, to me... putting words in his mouth, doesn't take this as a rebuilding project. I know what he's said in the past about where this team is at and kind of talked about the talent level, but I think he sees a team that is not, he's got to get reaching their maximum potential very quickly. You don't have a honeymoon period. And to lose a game, like, not to put down Charleston Southern, but to lose that game, they shouldn't lose it. I mean, they really shouldn't. They're the better baseball team. I know baseball is a quirky sport and that, you know, a hot pitcher can beat a good team on any given day, but the way they lost that game yesterday when they've been scoring a lot of runs, you get the feeling it doesn't sit well at all with Mark Kingston because of what you said, knowing the importance of these early season series and trying to get, from a confidence standpoint and a perception standpoint, a sweep.
Taking on Furman next up, 4:00 tomorrow at Founders Park. Bill, you were looking at the off the air, looking at the weather report. A lot of rain this week, but it looks like Tuesday and Friday when Carolina play this week. Clemson on Friday here at Founders Park. Rain should stay away as you look at the forecast today. Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, windy. Calling for windy weather on Friday. But the good news is it looks like no rain scheduled for this coming weekend, and a very small percentage of a chance scheduled for tomorrow, only about 20%. Supposed to rain today and Wednesday, so hopefully should be good weather for baseball when the Gamecocks take the field this week. Tomorrow, 67, the high, and then this weekend, supposed to be windy on Friday, nice day on Saturday, and a nice day on Sunday. So should be good weather for a fun weekend series.
Good news for a few Gamecocks in spring training with their respective big league teams. Michael Roth trying to catch on with the Chicago Cubs. He got the opening day start for spring training for the Chicago. He went a couple of scoreless innings. Jordan Montgomery making his spring training debut yesterday with the Yankees. A couple of scoreless innings on the mound for him as well. Christian Walker with the Arizona Diamondbacks caught on at the end of the year with them last year. Had a great year in AAA. He hit a home run yesterday in spring training as well. Awfully business-like program this morning with the NCAA investigation or the FBI investigation into college basketball being what it is. Maybe we can have a little bit more fun as we move on through the week.
Yeah, we didn't get into some of the stuff that was discussed over the weekend at Founders Park. Sunglasses at a wedding? Yes or no? Are you allowed to wear? And would you spend more money on sunglasses or a suit?
First of all, is the wedding outside?
It's an outside wedding, yes.
Well, that's something. And then what do you mean spend more money on sunglasses or a suit?
Think about what I can get more into that. And also because I didn't know how to spell vowels, your wedding vowels this weekend, a lady turned around to me at Founders Park and said, I thought you were from the early game.
The world famous Bill Gunter. I'm Tim Hill. She's Jen Jensen. Thanks for listening. 107.5 The Game.